again, I teach there's no home runs. Like today, it's a bunch of base hits. You just have to get the first, slide to second, steal third, and hope to get home.
Welcome to the Practice Growth Summit. I'm super excited to be with you here with this incredible interview with the movers and shakers of the profession. People are making a huge impact, both for our profession and our clients and our communities. This doc I'm going to introduce in a moment, he is not only the owner of four offices, he also is the founder of ChiroFest. Over 600 people have joined that, and he's been practicing for 21 years. And I always say this, I love interviewing people who've got multiple offices because they're the definition of skin in the game. And they don't make this work in their practices. That's multiplied, right? They've got a lot more risk. And that's good because you know that what they're doing has to work, you know? So I'm very excited to introduce to you today. So Dr. Paul Reed, say hello.
Hello. Thank you, my brother, for having me on. And you as well doing big things. So I appreciate you and all that you're doing for the profession.
Thank you so much. And I'm so excited to be speaking at ChiroFest this year. Thank you so much for the opportunity. So I tell you what, tell some of our listeners a bit about you. Like, how did you get involved in chiropractic? Why the urge to go multiple offices? And let's start there, you know?
Cool. So yeah, man, I think like a lot of us that have been in chiropractic for a while, I had an experience with chiropractic, and that's why I, you know, became a chiropractor. Yeah. I was, you know, heavily involved in sports growing up, hurt myself. My folks took me to the chiropractor, cleared me of subluxation at that time. I didn't know what it was, right? But you know, as I matured in my chiropractic understanding, I knew that that appointment was a divine appointment because I literally got up from the table in eighth grade, right, 14 years old, and said, I am going to do that. Didn't know really what it was, what it meant, how I was going to do it, but I knew that that was something that I wanted to give back to the community. Later on, one of my mentors, you know, taught us that chiropractic connects man the physical with man the spiritual, right? And I knew that instant in time, I had a spiritual experience that connected me with my why for this planet. And so that's, you know, and I charted that course, you know, from 14 years old. I said, that's what I want to do. And when my sports are done, you know, I use sports as my vehicle to get me to college and do some different things. But, you know, with the end game, always knowing that chiropractic was what I was going to do beyond that. So that's really how I got into chiropractic. And so it was young age. Yeah.
What sport were you involved in?
Yeah, I wrestled and played football. So that injury was actually a wrestling injury, but I played college football. And so, you know, again, I share from stage how chiropractic kept me functioning and healthy to be able to play, you know, Division I football. So.
Oh man, that's awesome. So tell us about the start. You know, a lot of time people might see now four offices, being able to have 600 people in the room at ChiroFest and, you know, running a massive organization, a great conference, an awesome team, you know, amazing family, all those things. And sometimes people like forget, you know, the start's often a different story for a lot of people, a lot of us, right? So tell us a little bit about the start. You know, how was when you first opened your first practice, I think, 21 years ago, tell us about that, you know, and tell us about some of the challenges you experienced and lessons you learned. If you were able to tell yourself 21 years ago, you know, some piece of advice, what would you say? Tell us about the start and some advice you would love to have told yourself back then.
Yeah. So actually one of your summit speakers, Dr. Ron Oberstein.
Yes.
Who's coming. So I, again, young into the profession, went to a non-principled school, but hung out with a lot of principled chiropractors, was involved in philosophy and seminars all through chiropractic school. And I went to one of Ron's seminars when it was the Power Zone back when Ron was coaching and had a super successful practice at the time. And signed up. So before I even had my license, so here I am married, got married in undergrad school, went through chiropractic school. I meet with Ron. I come home from this seminar. I'm like, honey, I met this guy. He's going to help us go from here to here, but we need to send him 12 post-dated checks for $750. I'm like, she's like, what? I'm like, I know we're supposed to do it. I trust him. So we're going to do it. You know, so I don't even have my office yet. I don't have my location picked out. So I write Ron 12 checks, you know, for $750, mail them to him and start coaching with him 6 months before he even opened.
Wow.
And so it was, when I travel and speak and share and coach, I'm like, guys, like that was the most priceless thing that I could have ever invested in myself to help me. So as soon as I opened the doors, I mean, within, a month I was seeing 100 a week, you know, 3 months, 300, like it got the ball rolling. So that, you know, it took out some of the bumps and the curves that I would have experienced had I not done that. So I would say the one most, you know, impressionable thing that I would encourage people to do is find somebody you resonate with, hire them as your coach, life coach, business coach, whatever it might be, to help you really get to where you want to go. Now, I had a vision all through chiropractic school. What I saw is my office, right? Like here's what it looks like. Here's what I want to serve. But I didn't know how to like put those mechanics into place. So hiring Ron, you know, way back when helped me really hit the ground running so that I was, you know, blessed and successful almost from the get-go. A lot of people are like, you know, I ran into struggles. Did you ever have those? And I honestly can say, Ryan, that I, you know, my wife and I look back, we're like, we've just been blessed beyond belief. I never had any of those hiccups. Now it does have challenges and tough times and, you know, discord and all those things that happen, but just as in regards to practice, I just feel like not only was I aligned with doing what I was called to do in this universe, but, you know, having somebody help me fast track it,
Speed. I think, I don't know if you know the story, actually. I'm talking, first of all, you know, you were blessed, but it came from an investment in yourself. Yeah. And I often say that this sounds really woo-woo what I'm about to say now, but I honestly believe that sometimes the results from the investment happen before the coaching happens. I know that sounds weird. It's like, it's the universe. It's like, can you imagine the message you sent to the universe about your belief in yourself before you started practicing, no income. I mean, there are docs all over the world that do that right to this day, and they've already got income and they've got a place, and you did it before you did practice. So that self-belief is like the message you sent to that universe. It's just crazy self-belief. And then all the coaching obviously always helps. So I'm a true believer that a coach without a coach is not a coach. I've always got mentors, always got coaches. I've always got masterminds and involvement. The amount of money I spend a month is obscene.
Right.
But here you go. Every level is a new devil. So every level is a new devil. So we're all on our journey. It doesn't matter how great someone looks on stage or something. He's got a, you know, I personally speak with, you know, Rob Kiyosaki has his own coaches, and those guys, no matter how big they get. So I mean, that'll change a doc's life just by having that, copying what you did there, really.
Yeah.
Right. Very cool. So now four offices, many years later, you know, so specifically kind of, there's practice growth, but we really want to focus on new patient acquisition. Not only that, but really what's working for you guys now?
Yeah.
What has worked for you really, really well in the past? What's like some of your bankers? What's worked really well for you? Just talk us through that a little bit right now.
You know, so I try and teach my docs that low-hanging fruit is the easiest thing to get. And so that comes from education, right? The more we educate our people, the more you do advanced classes and different things within the practice where people are bringing in their own tribe to your tribe, they're already, it's like a warm sales call. They already have trust and faith and belief in you because their friend, their family member, whomever has given you that trust. And so I think within our practices, the going after the low hanging fruit is the easiest thing. And that, again, that comes from a highly educated practice member. And now, does that ever go away? 21 years. I have people that have been with me all 21 years, and you know, they still don't fully get the principle that you and I live, right? They kind of have the chiropractic lifestyle, but they don't fully get it. And that's why constant continuous education is so pivotal in what we do as a chiropractor, because it's, you know, they're with us, whatever, a minute to 10 minutes within your practice. And then they're outside your practice being screwed up, you know, the rest of the day.
Yeah.
And so constantly having fun and educating at the same time, and then host, you know, better results, faster class or whatever it might be to help educate them at the next level with a guest or family member. And then that patient or potential patient becomes a patient. So that's the one thing that I think is our cornerstone is education.
Nice. So talk us through that strategy a little bit, because, you know, we have events as well as we big on talks and things like that in our offices, and we break them down into three. We do events outside in the corporate world in companies. Amazing. We get people to come to us through lead generation, through Facebook and things like that, come into office, and then we do in-house. That's kind of the way I've always looked at it. It's like you've got your in-house to your current clients, and then they bring partners and things like that, and then you can drive people into your practice from outside, and you can go to local communities. And one of the things, the challenges I see within one of those being in-house education classes, advanced classes, is show up rate. So tell us, that's just some of the challenges I see with my docs. So tell us about how you've come, tell us about that. Do you relate to that? Is that something, how have you come around that? And how have you solved that problem if you have?
No, it is a problem. And I wouldn't say that we have solved it 100%.
Yeah.
But I would say that my team just continues to swing.
Yeah.
That's the thing is I see that docs get discouraged because I had X, Y, and, I had 10 people scheduled and one showed up. And then, so they live in the gap. So instead of focusing on the one and knowing that one could multiply, they focus on the 9 that didn't show up. And it's no different when you're young in practice, you get stuck on the one patient that complained, like you served 100 people today. And instead of focus on the 99 miracles, you're focused on that one that's like, oh, doc, that hurt, I didn't get better, whatever. And so it's the same thing with those, with the, potential not show rates to your advanced classes in your practice. We, instead of focus on the one or two or three or 10 people are there, we get worried about the ones that didn't show up. And then we let that, beat our spirit up. And then we lose our enthusiasm and our charisma to want to do it and educate and grow. I wouldn't say that we have 100% show rate by any means. We struggle with those things just like you. And I think as people, the world's gotten busier, that people are less, they don't want to prioritize that stuff. When I was, 21 years ago, my show rates were greater. Any advertising I did worked better. But I think today, instead of, I teach there's no home runs. Like today, it's a bunch of base hits. You just have to get the first, slide to second, steal third, and hope to get home, And so just it's constantly doing the things that you know to do over and over and over again. So
yeah, it's funny. I did an interview in the summit also, and I tell you, the word discipline comes up. I'll always tell my docs, like, success is pretty boring.
Discipline over and over again, right?
Yeah, it's like, 21 years, Dr. Paul, 21 years, and you talk about bankers, and I love that you talk about that, your low-hanging fruit, is we've got this disease in marketing, and this is where we talk about the disease in marketing. It doesn't matter whether you're a chiropractor or not, the disease in marketing is there's something that's working in and has worked in the past in all our practices, and we've got bored, and we've stopped doing it, and when we really look back, it's like, excuse my language, we're like, shit, we should get back to the
bank. I should have done that.
Yeah. Like, why did I stop doing that? Often when I say that to any webinar, etc., like, these light bulbs will go off. Like, what's the thing that you've stopped doing that worked for you, but you just have stopped doing it? And normally,
you just got bored, right? Exactly.
So anyway, that's the word that comes up for me, discipline. And I love that you said live in the gap. Isn't it necessarily like, we don't get paid on conversions, if you will, for instance. Like, if you had 20 people sign up for the advanced talk and 5, in our heads, we say, oh, that's only, a terrible show up rate, whatever percentage it is. But you don't, like, that's not the point. The point is that there's 5.
Yeah, right. They can multiply to 25.
Cherish the 5, So, okay, great. So tell us a little about some of the challenges right now you see from a marketing standpoint and some of the things that you're focusing on right now. Tell us, maybe it talks a little bit about, how you perceive online marketing versus offline and where you're heading more towards and what's working well for you right now.
And I think you'll probably agree with this, there's so much noise out there now. And I think people, just look around and look at the youth, right? They're constantly on their phones. There's just so much noise. Yeah. So I think, again, it comes to, we as professionals are going to have to do multiple things to touch people on multiple levels. So we're trying to ramp up more of our Instagram and all these different, touch points, for future influence. So I think that there's, again, it's going to be constant base hits. And so, because people are on so dynamic and moving and rarely do you see somebody sitting down and reading a book any longer, which is a lost art. I think we have to continuously be, evolving and having different touch points to try and influence people.
So how do you manage that? Because, as a practice owner, multiple hats, right? Yeah. So you've got the guy that works, as your successful operator working in the business, but none of us as chiropractors spend enough time working on the business. Yeah. you know, it's just like, I mean, I had an interview with a guy the other day and he was like, you're not spending at least 50% of your time in the marketing in some way, shape or form. And I was like, geez, if you tell that to a chiropractor, think about that statistic for a moment. That's not even possible, right? So, yeah. But somebody in the practice needs to be focusing on those things. So how do you manage that? The hat between being, you know, an operator and, you know, how to delegate time, how to those type of things, whether it's learning about that, et cetera. And tell us a little about your feedback on that.
You know, so I struggled with that, I would say, back till about 4 years, like 3.5 years ago, where I felt like I had to be in the practice, right? The practice is all, I had to have my hand in everything I did. And, you know, again, the universe provides. At that time, I was wanting to expand. We had two offices I wanted to grow. And so I had a major CrossFit injury where I couldn't, ruptured my quads superiorly. So all four of them detached, had to have them surgically reattached the next day. I couldn't bend my leg for 7 weeks. Couldn't put weight on it for 6 weeks. And so the lesson was like, okay, now I can't practice. Now what? Right. So what I would encourage people to do is, if you want to be in that growth mindset, is our system set up enough to where if you weren't there, things would continue to survive and more importantly thrive. And it was a great lesson that I actually did have the systems and process in place for Paul to not actually be in the practice. And so that's when we went from 3 to 5. And so that was a really eye-opening experience to like, okay, well, things are okay, Paul. You're going to be fine. You've set up the infrastructure so that it's not Paul's practice, right? It's Bridge and it's serving your community. But it is a definite balance. And trying to, I think the biggest struggle for chiros is to remove their ego and know that it doesn't have to be them, right? Because especially ones that are successful and have a big practice, it's like, I'm the driver. I'm, instead of like delegating and knowing it's going to be okay. But then having, you know, indicators, checks and balances for those team members in those areas, to making sure that it's the outcomes are what they're supposed to be. So my outreach coordinator, you know, perfect example, I had her doing some things to attorney referrals around our offices. She took it upon herself to feel that it wasn't successful and stopped doing it without, you know, asking. And then I checked back in, hey, how are those going? Oh, I haven't done them in a few months. Okay, well, why? I didn't feel that, you know, she explained that she didn't feel that it was, you know, getting the return investment that we wanted. I'm like, no, it takes time. Like, top of mind awareness, you have to stay in front of them. It'll happen. So we picked it back up and all of a sudden now we're starting to stimulate some referrals from it. So I was like, okay, this is why constant, consistent movement, you know, is important. We can't, you know, that's the other thing I would say to docs too. They'll try something and run with it for 4, 5, 6 weeks. Don't get the outcomes that they expect.
Yeah.
Right. When another week or two might've been that tipping point. Like, it's like, you have to keep the gas, you know, the pedal to the metal, like don't slow down, you know, and practice growth too. I try and teach folks that whatever your volume might be, there becomes a time when the practice will start to, I don't want to say self-evolve, but there's enough energy and enough momentum that it stimulates its own self. Mm-hmm. But you have to get to that point. And, you know, my docs and my satellites will like, they'll drive and they'll almost get there. And then they start to see some success and then they let off the gas. Right. And then they drop, their visits drop. I'm like, dude, it's like you're standing behind your car and you're pushing it and you got it rolling and it's easy. Right. So now you're just walking with it and then you stop. And then you got to put all that energy back into it to get it going again. And so it's like, whatever it might be, just like stick with it, knowing that you're going to get to the outcomes that you're setting.
No, I don't know if you found this, but just my practices, when the practice gets about, I don't know why, it's just a little number, but 300 a week, you know, that where it kind of runs itself and nothing runs itself, right? You've got to keep the wood in the fire. You've still got to do the marketing, but kind of a lot of the heavy lifting is done. And it seems to run itself. That's just my experience.
No, and you're 100% right. 250.
I don't know why. Yeah, like somewhere around there. It's just like a magic number. And it's just got, there's just enough people in there to just make it a little bit easier. So if you're close there, just keep going. But there is definitely a tipping point, but don't let off the gas because of that. Yeah. And I'll just touch on something that you mentioned there. I think a lot of docs battle with the statement I'm going to say now. It's One of the best definitions I've ever heard of a business is the definition of a business is a profit-making enterprise that works without you. Now, for a doc, that's a tough thing to hear because now that does not mean that for it to be a successful business that you ever have to stop adjusting, but you have to add, the business has to run in such a way as if the personality of you, anybody could be adjusting there, and people will battle that because look, we're all a little bit addicted to walking to the coffee shop or wherever it is. I know you own your own coffee shop, but, but it's pretty cool walking into a restaurant at something and say, hey, Dr. So-and-so. Hi, Dr. Singh. How are you doing? Hey, Dr. So-and-so. Like, and I don't care what doc you are. That is pretty cool. And it's a little bit addictive that, and you said the ego. So I think it's the act as if, and you know, the great business books like E-Myth and all those books that like were the foundations of a lot of our reading talk about running it as if it is a business that works without you. So in my experience, my docs that I work with, they get, it's the opposite of what you may think. They get busier the less they do. What I mean by that is the less the team, when you go, then you build a team and you've got your, like you said, the reason that quote to me, you said my outreach manager.
Yeah.
And what's so interesting about that is like most docs think that they have to be the outreach manager.
Right. Yeah.
So the less they do, if like if they focus on the adjusting and they focus on the working on the business and the key skills that like I believe are the things, it's a funny one. The less they do by virtue of making a team that does it around them and helps them build the practice like you've done, that's what my experience a little bit is, this false belief that like the harder I work, I've got to do every single thing in the practice for it to work. So it's a little bit of a conundrum there. Anyway, so we've had some good stuff from you already. We've really understood the what I really liked about some of the stuff you said. Again, the word discipline comes up a lot. There is no silver bullet, right?
No, and you know, and successful life is boring, man. I like do this my routine. You know, that's the other thing I would, you know, that I learned from Ron, and from reading and being coached by other successful people is, your routine is your routine and stick to that routine. You know, I'm a 4 a.m. guy.
Talk us through your routine.
You know, so I'm a 4 a.m. guy. I'm to the gym by 5, home by 6:20. You know, do my prep to get myself to the office. I get to the office early so that we can look at the schedule, visualize who's going to be there, who should be there. Do your huddle, right? We huddle before every shift and set our goals. You know, what? How many people are, you know, how many special appointments, how many regular appointments? We want to exceed the regular and the special appointments by X amount, meaning, you know, there's 3 new patients on there. Let's set a goal of seeing 5. We have 50 adjustments in the morning. Let's set a goal of seeing 60 or whatever it might be. We talk about any, you know, if there's any, somebody that's fading off of care or somebody that needs a, you know, a little extra time to communicate why they're here and why they hired us. Lunchtime, I usually do business stuff. So we have a couple hour gap between I'm doing email, you know, communicate you and different people doing, you know, management stuff. And then back before afternoon shift, huddling again and set in the afternoon. And then cruise into the evening.
So, what time do you go to bed?
I'd like to say earlier, but it's usually between or close to 10. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Fantastic. Well, do you know, I don't know if you realize this, but in this interview, you've used the word visualize more than once.
Okay. I didn't.
Two times. And what's interesting is in a lot of the summit interviews I've done, the word visualize has come out. And it's so interesting. I'm obviously I've got a 2-year-old daughter right now, so my routines are a little bit out, but I was a 5 a.m. guy that did my routines, et cetera. And now I just try to get them done. So it's a bit of survival mode. Watching this, you've got younger kids, you know what I'm talking about. But tell us a little bit about if there are any tips or tell us how you would recommend a lot of there's sometimes people develop an unhealthy relationship with goal setting because the goal that they set, they often don't, with the goal, I was taught the goal you set, the lesson you learn, even in trying to hit the goal, sometimes you learn more of a lesson from not hitting the goal and you grow, et cetera. So, but it's about, in my mind, it's about reframing that. But tell us your experience with goal setting, visualizing, and maybe like, you know, a hack to prevent that unhealthy relationship with goal setting. Because often we set goals, we don't achieve them, and we think, oh, you know. So tell us about what pops up for you when I say that.
You know, I kind of back to the when somebody doesn't show up for a class, right? We get that, yes. that we start to live yes. in a gap where we get negative instead of knowing that, it's part of the process, like you're saying. So it's not necessarily hitting that goal, but like you said, it's what you've learned in the process that's making you better. And it's not in your time, right? So that goal, even though it's you will hit it, right? It might not be when you thought you would hit it, but stick to it. You know, I had a great lesson. This is bad mentorship that I had back in the day. So again, with balance with your family, right? So the other thing I'd say with goal setting and or your routine or schedules, you have to be fluid, right? Because stuff comes up. Yet, like, you know, one of the times we spoke, you had a sick kid, right? Like you can't be so rigid, that it's breaking down success. So you have to be a little bit fluid. And same thing with practice, right? People aren't going to show up. People are going to walk in that you didn't expect. You just have to have a little bit of that fluidity within your adaptability, right? So when you're clear and connected and unsubluxated, you're adaptable. And so it's the same thing with life and your routines and your patterns and your goals. Like, it rains a lot. I don't know if it rains. I think it rains a lot where you guys are at, right? It rains a lot here. And so I share the example of like, so with raindrops on a window, right? So if you follow that raindrop running down the window, it doesn't have a straight line. It's gonna connect to a raindrop over here, right? And then it's gonna diagonal a little bit before it drops down. And so that raindrop, if you watch it on a window, never just goes straight top to the bottom. It always has its own little life or pattern that it takes on its journey to the bottom of the window. And so it's the same thing. Like, I might wanna go from A to Z straight, but I might have to go over to Montana and then over to see you and back and around to be able to get to where I want to go. And so we just, I want to say, just go with it, but don't be so rigid and stuck in where you want to go. Accept the process.
Yeah.
And as long as you can lay your head down at night, knowing that you did everything in your personal power to move towards that goal, you should be comfortable with that. But if you had a day to where you're like, you were off, and you laid your head down, you're like, man, I should have done this. Why didn't I do that? Then that's where you start to get more mental, like, battle, that struggle, that tug of war inside. But if you're doing everything every day in your power possible to move you closer to that, then know that it's going to happen, but not necessarily on your time.
Got it. I actually literally wrote that down. And if you listen to this right now, you should write that sentence down. It's not in your time. Because you just saved, like, Dr. Paul's just saved you a world of pain. No, because, like, you know, and I always have a vision board. And one of the things I noticed in my vision board, and there's a time frame that I'd like to achieve it in that year or whatever. But one of the things I've noticed with the vision board is exactly that. Everything on the vision board happens, but not in my time.
Yep.
But it's the discipline and the trust and the faith to keep on doing the vision board when the damn thing hasn't happened.
Like we keep saying, visualizing it, seeing it. Yeah. Yeah.
So it all happens. Like, it's everything on my vision board I've ever done. Like, obviously there's loads more, but everything, like, it's all happening, but not in my time. Some of them I wanted to achieve 4 years ago and I'm only doing it now, but it's to continue doing that. So I think you've given us all a huge gift just with that sentence, not in your time.
And the brilliant thing is sometimes it happens faster, right? Like, I've had stuff like, it's like once, like, I want that by here. And it's like, that's done. Like, oh, I didn't even realize it. It's done. Like,
nice. Yeah, very cool. Listen, I was going to finish with one thing that I'm a huge believer in. I truly believe that for a business, one of the best statements I've ever heard in my life is the worst number in business is one. So if you've only got one marketing source, if you're only relying on referrals, if you, whatever it is, you've only got the worst number in business is one. And you spoke, I wrote it down when you said it. You said you need multiple avenues and multiple things you're involved in. So would you mind just very briefly, if you had to give us four or three or four or five or two or like of the basics when it comes to like a marketing perspective, what are some ideas that you have for docs that they should be looking towards? Even if it's broadly, what should they have a couple, when they say irons in the fire, where should they be at least putting some of their attention from a marketing perspective or new patient acquisition?
Man, I think you already said it, man, to be honest, because we're doing a lot of the same things. So it's the in-office stuff,
yes,
right? It's the lead generation for a class, whether it might be a dinner with a doc,
yes,
or a talk on a specific subject. And then getting in and doing corporate, we do the same things, right? We go to a bank and do a talk to their team members. So going to where the people at. So that's It's like you said, it's the practice members, right? Bringing people. It's you doing leads to find people, and then it's you going to the people.
So tell us what you're using for leads. So what are some of the avenues?
Some of the same stuff that you're mentioning, Facebook ad to create a dinner with the doc.
Yes.
Or something of that effect, or we'll do an ad for we're going to do a thyroid talk at the office or something that's, you know, a hot topic or subject.
Nice. I'll share a bit of a lesson we had, and then maybe you can write to me, and we'll finish on this note. Is I am the vitalistic chiropractor. I wanted to go out and tell the world about the incredible topics like how to live longer, how to live your best life, how to, you know, all the cool things, you know, how to live subluxation free, all those things. And you know what? There were such great topics that nobody showed up. So my lesson in the marketplace is, and BJ Palmer spoke about this, that symptoms sell. That's what he spoke about. It's amazing. It's just with the thyroid, the fibromyalgia talk, the anxiety talk, we do some pregnancy workshops and some of those things. So sometimes you have to, in my experience, it's about going to the marketplace with what the marketplace is looking for and then educating them what they can have over time. And tell us a little bit about your experience of that, because I know we had some horrific show-ups with what we thought were amazing topics because they were our passion, but they weren't the marketplace's passion. Yeah. So tell us about that.
Well, and I would 100% agree with you. Like, if you know, teach the chiropractic lifestyle or live abundance without symptoms of pain. I think it's because the world is so symptom driven.
Yeah.
That they don't even think wellness, right? Even though there's a lot of wellness talk, people truly don't understand wellness. So if they don't understand it, they're not gonna seek it. And so, we do the same thing, right? You had to, as much as, you know, it's outside of, you know, chiropractors aren't symptom-based people, right? But we have to, 90-some% of the practice members that come in are expressing some sort of symptom, and that's what drew them to your practice. And so finding what is hot and marketing to that to draw that person in, and then laying down your foundation, right? Your day one, your day two, your day three, whatever it is that you have for your system and process to educate them on the why, so that when that 10% of the nervous system gets better with their symptom, they're fixing the 90% to allow their body to express optimal health. So
very cool. Listen, I'll tell you that if someone's listening to this right now, they'll save you a world of pain, because I know when you start marketing and you come from the philosophical background that we do and you want to fulfill that outreach, you will have some hard lessons along the way, like I did. And then you realize, you know, you've got to have people in front of you to serve lots of people. So you've got to put buttons in seats. So now, we just recently did anxiety and depression talk, and we had something that I would never felt comfortable doing a few years ago. And we had almost 60 people register for that.
Oh, that's awesome.
60 people in the room, and, you know, 25 of them became chiropractic patients, you know?
Awesome.
So, you know, and you just think like, you know, that is an avenue that I probably wouldn't have looked at a couple of years ago, but I realized like, you know, the marketplace has changed and look at 25 people being served under chiropractic because of that. And one of our amazing docs that we work with. So, cool, man. I just had a lot of fun chatting with you.
No, yes, it's been amazing. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I hope you found this podcast or this interview, this summit, really, really interesting. Dr. Paul, I learned a lot. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I think our multiple practice owner docs are unsung heroes in the profession. It's a lot harder than it looks, right? Yeah. I've lost a lot of my hair, Dr. Paul. But listen, thank you so much for the nuggets. And again, I just want to recap a couple of things. For me, it was not in your time. Multiple streams of new clients, putting on classes, in-house stuff, and your low-hanging fruit that you mentioned, which is a killer for me. So guys, I hope you had an amazing time. I know that just take one of those things. I promise you have practice growth. We love and appreciate you. Thank you for your time. Dr. Paul, any closing words?
No, just thank you. Appreciate you, brother. Thank you. Keep on keeping on.
Thanks, guys.
Hey docs, thanks for watching the video. I hope it was helpful. If you haven't yet got my book, it's completely free, New Patient Avalanche. It's exactly how I grew my 8 practices, saw 10,000 new patients every single year from the strategies in this book. Everything's in here. It's completely free. All you do is pay for the shipping and the postage. Click on the link. I promise it'll help your practice grow. See you at the next video.